Welcome to the Stahl's Heat Press for Profit podcast, a show designed for people who are trying to make it in their heat print hustle. I'm your host, Josh Ellsworth, and we're excited to welcome Eric Campbell, a guru on all things embroidery. Eric has quite the rap sheet. He writes like a boss, shares advice like a teacher, and has a point of view that is informed by real-life experiences. Eric, it's great to have you. Can you spend a minute or two telling our listeners about who you are and your journey in this world of decorated apparel?
Absolutely. First, I have to thank you for that glowing review there. That was a really good intro. But yeah, people may know me from my writing, most likely. I write for several industry magazines, but the top ones are Printwear, which I do monthly, and Images Magazine out in the UK, so both sides of the pond. But the reason why I get to do all that stuff is I was actually primarily a digitizer, but also an embroiderer for almost 20 years, starting out, honestly, while I was still getting my very unrelated college degree. And throughout that time, I actually not only did digitize and do quite a lot of embroidery and e-commerce while I was working, I also wrote and taught, starting out with blogging for the people over at Stitches in about 2006. So that's really where I have come from, lots of digitizing, art prep, and embroidery, but have continued on to do education at trade shows, education through the magazines, online education as well, and am continuing to do so now.
Awesome. Awesome. So before we get too deep, I'd like to give our listeners a quick overview about the show in case this is your first episode. The format is simple. We host casual conversations with apparel decorators and thought leaders like Eric, trade ideas, talk through successes and challenges, all while allowing you to listen in hopes that you'll come away with insight that can help you grow your business. So Eric, our topic today is about adding a heat press to an embroidery business. But before we get there, with all of those things that you've done in your history and that you continue to do, one of the questions I have is, what keeps you motivated?
What keeps me motivated? I think, honestly, because I've been very open to sharing this whole time. When I first started out, there was this idea that there were industry secrets that you just shouldn't share. And when I first kind of was blogging and telling everybody all these technical things about digitizing embroidery, I actually had some pushback. But I remember very distinctly when I started, I had to teach myself. I was pretty much in a corner as an operator. I found a digitizing system under a dust cover and asked what it was. And from then on, within about 3 months, I was in full production. And I did that without anybody helping me along, which meant a lot of trial and error and late nights and pain. And going from that remembrance and having all these people asking for questions who I know, if I can just give them 5 minutes of my time, I can save them weeks of trial and error. I stay motivated because that continues to be the case. And I don't always see the kind of education that is technical and kind of breaks things down to that atomic level that I like to, that gets people, you know, on the ground so they can work for themselves. So with that in mind, I stay really active in social media. I stay active in the trade show scene. And I get questions all the time. So it's easy to stay motivated when people keep asking.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think so, you know, really the when you see the advice helping somebody, which I'm sure I know customers, just customer after customer that have been helped through the educational efforts, whether that's through the columns or you host a podcast and participate on many podcasts yourself. So you're out there in a lot of different places. And that's really cool. That you continue to do that.
Well, I think it's vital. I mean, any of us who get tagged with industry veteran, which by the way, oh, that hurts. I don't feel that old yet, guys. But yeah, whenever you get tagged with that, you're like, you know, it doesn't just have to mean, you know, I'm some old guy who's still hanging around the business. It means, hey, I'm somebody who's had some experience that can help someone come up. And if we can bring up that next generation correctly, then we increase the value of what we're doing and we actually make our entire industry better.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think just to go down that that path for a second is you have quite a bit of, what do you want to call, influencers out there in the market now. And with the rise of social media and all of these different ways that people can publish content, you know, there's a lot of bad information out there. But there's also a lot of information of people that are pretty well informed and even sharing that advice in a more organic way. And coming up through the ranks. So I think it's always nice when you can inspire and people can learn from your content. And as an industry veteran, right, we have a challenge to stay relevant, but you can continue to pass it on and see it keep on giving many times over.
Well, on top of it, it's like I learn new things every day. I really do. And I know everybody says that. Oh, you learn something new every day. No, seriously. I learn so much from the people who are coming up and don't have the same kind of standardization that we do in production. They start to do new techniques and they have new ideas about marketing. And going out to the trade shows and doing this stuff in the open and social media means I get a constant stream of people who are new and fresh with their different perspectives and points of view to talk to. And a lot of the time I bring them in. I try and get them in front of people and try and condense what they're doing into something that other people can learn from too. And in that way, I kind of have kept away just becoming kind of that stodgy guy who says, go back and do it the way we used to do it. I think it's the worst reason to do anything is because that's how it's always been done.
Yeah, frankly, it's just boring after a while, right?
Absolutely. I've written a lot of articles. I don't want to write the same articles every time. I get tired of it too, guys.
Good. So to frame our conversation, I'd like to first get some insight on running an embroidery business, because sure. I know that's the background at which you're coming at through heat printing and what that mm-hmm. can really do for a business. You mentioned something there about standardization in production yeah. and production processes. Do you see that as being one of the top challenges any decoration business faces?
I think so. And I think embroiderers frequently, I'm seeing more and more people coming out of the cottage home industry and people who really love it as a creative art. And because of that, they come into things either without a lot of production experience where they're not doing mass production, or honestly, they have trouble with the business side, pricing. Things like that. It's really incredibly hard for them to get the handle around pricing and to make it actually, instead of saying the old tired thing we've always heard, which is like 99 cents or a dollar per thousand stitches, that doesn't work everywhere and in every context, and it cuts away a lot of what you can do with pricing on value. That's probably one of the chief things. But then production processes, yeah, absolutely. Managing information actually is really hard for folks. Doing quotes, keeping the information going, and marketing and sales. All of that, the business side of it, is really where things suffer, because they're already into the creative side of it pretty frequently.
Great. There's a lot that you said there that I'd like to dive a little deeper in and
sure.
unpack. Let me start with the pricing conversation, because you're right. Price per thousand stitches is the age-old way, and you still see that yeah. a lot out there in a lot of shops. So what is your approach to pricing that you're recommending?
You can still work with price per thousand stitches as a way to get your baseline, but you have to take into account what I call the minimum to maintain when I teach this. And that is the actual minimum, not only to maintain your shop, which everybody says, you know, the break-even number, all the outgoing stuff that you have in your costs and your overhead, but also the minimum to maintain yourself as the chief worker, especially if you're a solopreneur, or the workers that you have involved, the labor that you have involved. You have to have that as a baseline, and then look at profit before you ever start pricing. If you're not pricing for profit from the get, then you're missing something on running a business. I mean, it's fine if you want to make yourself kind of a place to do embroidery that pays for itself. There's nothing wrong with that as a success condition for your company, but if you want more than that, you need to know that stuff ahead of time. You have to be able to maintain yourself in a normal, a normal wage, a normal lifestyle, and you have to be able to cover all your overhead and then get a little bit of profit in, or there's really no point to what we're doing in the business sphere. So for me, it's more about doing time studies, knowing what those costs are, but also understanding that beyond that, there's pricing by value. One of the chief things I always tell people, there's a story from my days in printing and embroidery, of course, where we sold blanks, and I mean literal blank garments, no decoration on them. They usually would cost a customer $6, and one of our customers sold them for $60, and the only difference was cents of a neck print with their particular logo in the neck, and it was packaged nicely because it was going into a boutique. So $6, $60, absolutely the same shirt. That has to do a lot more with context and the way they were selling it than it has to do with the garment. You don't always have to have labor or materials pinned to the price. They don't have to be locked together. And if there's anything about pricing I'd like people to understand, is that no matter how you're pricing, it doesn't have to be more input to get more price out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. So making sure that we're not cutting ourselves short on what the yeah. market can command is a great tip.
Every time somebody tells me, I couldn't charge that, I usually ask them if they've tried, and no one has.
Well, you read all the studies, right? And you see whether that's in the state of the industry reports by any of the popular mm-hmm. magazines that they publish out. One of the top challenges every year, or usually ranks in the top five, is price competitiveness. And, yeah. We just can't make enough money at this. So I think that being able to price at market value, and if you're struggling with price, to really challenge yourself on how am I creating unique value for my specific customer target. And clearly, somebody that can sell a small logo on a blank package nicely for $60 has a brand that's connecting with the consumer that's willing to pay that.
Well, and here's the other thing. As the decorator, it's totally fine if we set that up, that experience for them, and help them to do the sourcing to charge more than we would for a normal wholesale decoration job. Just because we're doing the same amount of printing as we would do for a normal wholesale job doesn't mean we have to charge the same to said boutique who's selling it for that price if we help them come up with the solution. The biggest thing we have to do is stop being a commodity t-shirt box, whether you're a heat printer, embroiderer, whatever you're doing. Don't be a commodity garment producer. Be a solutions person, someone who provides a solution and helps someone create an experience for their customers.
Perfect. Perfect. I love it. So that's great information. And we could spend hours there, I'm sure.
For sure.
But I want to make sure we get through all of the little nuggets of advice that undoubtedly you'll have to share with our listeners. So that's a little bit on some of the challenges, especially coming from the cottage industry that I like the word solopreneur. Did I say that correctly?
Solopreneur. You'll hear a couple of those that I say a lot. Solopreneur, or the other one is prosumer, which is the equipment that's for the consumer level equipment that is now approaching professional levels of production.
Yeah. We've been using the prosumer term a little bit as well, because we see it a lot with vinyl cutters specifically, but I'm sure it's the same on the embroidery side of the business.
Absolutely it is. It's anyone who hasn't woken up to the prosumer market, it's amazing if they haven't figured that out. And seeing the way people are packaging the supplies that we're used to getting and the equipment they're used to getting, those manufacturers already understand what's going on. So if we don't get it, we're going to miss something.
Okay, excellent, excellent. So pricing, one of the top challenges embroiderers have. I think something else that I've been harping on, and I think our previous two episodes with actual apparel decorators, were opportunity costs and really valuing their time differently.
Yeah.
Do you see that a lot where... maybe a decorator is consuming themselves on the production side of the business and really not able to move past the level that they're at and plateau at a certain point?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, especially with embroidery, so many people like to do the embroidery that they forget to work on the business instead of in the business. And I'm sure you've actually heard that probably on the cast. People say that all the time, but what it really means in this case is that people aren't marketing. They're not trying to sell. And frankly, there are times when it's time for a business owner, if they can have employees, to step out of production, if the best place for them to be is in expanding the business, working on marketing, working on relationships. It doesn't mean that has to be the case. In fact, one of the things I've taught pretty frequently is that when you're looking for your first employee, if it really comes out that what you want to do with your time is the creative side of this thing and the production side of this thing, it's okay to partner with somebody else who wants to do the business and marketing. That's okay. If, as the person who started the business, you want someone else to come in and do that side, that's fine, but ignoring it is not okay. And so invariably, the opportunity cost is not just getting locked down in the production. It's that you forget that everything that brings jobs in has to keep going. The other thing that people do pretty frequently is pull back on marketing once they have some work. Mm. And that's just the worst thing you can do. Or when work slows down, the first cost they cut is marketing. And it's just the worst idea, because that's where the work comes from.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. Okay, good. So speaking specifically about the opportunities that you think, just from a real tactical side, that a heat press delivers for a business that's been, I guess, solely focused on embroidery, what are those some of those low-hanging fruits that you see when that people should invest in a heat press?
Well, I mean, the easiest one is when people just are looking for printing, because people forget that you don't have to be involved necessarily with having like a sublimation printer or any other sort of printer to get into printing, because so many people will produce the transfers for you. Either heat press transfers, classic Plastisol screen print style transfers, or other people can do cutting for you and you can have things done. So you really only need the heat press to get into any sort of apparel and accessories printing as an embroiderer. though I thoroughly think you should have a cutter. Let's just put it out there. I think that most embroiderers, you need to go ahead and get yourself a cutter, not only because you'll want to do heat press materials, but because you'll be using it for applique as well. Doing your own custom applique can be done with a standard cutter. Add to that the fact that you can do your own custom heat press stuff, and the cutter combination with the heat press is something that's unbeatable as a way to expand your business.
Great. What are you seeing in the applique market? I mean, do you think that's a category that's still growing?
You know, I really do, honestly, because I think people are looking for things that look more complicated and multi-decoration processes. Some stuff that we did pretty early that I now see taking off in certain segments are sublimated applique, where you sublimate an image or an all-over print, and then you applique material down out of that, you cut out of that print. I'm seeing that pretty frequently. And also, I'm just seeing different combinations of applique and heat press printing. You'll see people who will do jersey sets where you have applique numbers, but then they do heat press names, so there's not quite as much time spent in the personalization. And I think that combination is still pretty powerful. And frankly, having a heat press is great for embroidery for multiple reasons, including up to the point of literally using it on your embroidery. Some embroiderers really swear by setting their embroidery by heat pressing it. I think sometimes that's because they've got some overly dense embroidery in it. They're trying to flatten it out. But having a heat press for that is, honestly, even if you're buying applique pre-cut from someone just to do the really traditional, like we said, the sets for jerseys, things like that, having your own heat press, you can properly set those things is important. You should do that with no other reason. You should do that anyway. The other stuff that you do see a lot of people getting into recently, and the funny thing is, I always thought this was a fad when I first started. I'm just going to go ahead and call myself out. Rhinestones. I thought that rhinestones would go away. I thought for a little while that it would just, that the bling was gone. There would be no more shiny materials. And honestly, it hasn't gone away. And in certain segments, it is stronger than ever. So I see, rhinestones and metallic treatments, glitter flake. These things are still going on and are hard to achieve in other ways. You know, it's hard to achieve the look of glitter flake or hollow or any of that stuff in any other way but using a heat press material. And combining that with embroidery for a multimedia look, or doing the, like the standard, the rip-away applique, where you can use heat press materials and do an easy no-cut applique that doesn't require you to have a cutter, that stuff is only, I think, going to become more interesting as people want these retail styles that have kind of that multi-decoration look.
Okay, great, great. And so just so we don't leave any of the listeners behind, because I know there's a lot of technical aspects to this, like just like baseline definition for applique for somebody who may not really understand what that is. Do you have one of those that you use?
Sure. Well, I can just kind of give a little definition for it. I mean, applique in general is just applying any sort of material to a garment in this case, and either stitching it down, heat pressing it down, and using that as part of the decoration. Traditionally with embroidery, you're going to have something like a cut twill. That's the real classic you see on like a jersey. You'll have a cut twill number or a logo or a shape, and you will stitch a placement line down, place that on the material, and then stitch some sort of covering stitch around the edge. And usually you'll use a heat press, of course, to seal that down. It often has a heat seal adhesive behind it. So that's the classic applique we know. But then when you go on to, I talked about, the rip-away applique. That's where you take something like a heat press material, say, people always say, heat transfer vinyl, but whatever sort of heat press material it is, I like glitter flake is great for this. And you actually put your placement stitch down that defines the area of your decoration. Then you can lay an entire sheet uncut of that material down over the placement stitch area, and you stitch down, say, a satin stitch border around it. Nice shiny satin stitches, tight stitches if you don't know embroidery very well. And when you do that, you can actually tear away the excess material and heat press that down so it looks like a pre-cut classic applique, but it's a lot easier and a lot faster than the old school twill.
Good, good. Yeah, that's we've seen that be an effective way, especially for decorators with a vinyl cutter. They order one inventory of a glitter material or whatever the heat transfer vinyl type is, and be able to just strip it from its carrier to do that rip-away process. So.
Oh, yeah, they do the rip-away process very easily on the embroidery side, and then if they have the cutter, they can then, like I said before, you can do a pre-cut heat seal-only process for other sorts of personalization that doesn't have the embroidery, and that actually increases the look without having as much decoration time. And the other thing I've actually seen recently also is the use of flock materials for heat press. Same kind of thing, getting a little bit of texture without having to use all of the time that's spent in embroidery.
Yeah, and we're really seeing that on this side as well, as just a resurgence of materials like flock for the texture element. And I think we're seeing that in general with the applique and also the patch business. And I know you talk a lot about patches in the articles you write. So what are some of the opportunities for patches that you see out there for heat printing? Well,
there's a ton of opportunities for patches. Honestly, the one great thing about a patch is you've got a decoration that is a non-sized item that can be sold to anybody. And at this point, patches have become almost a visual style. Patch hats are really big right now. And you can produce these patches for anybody. So it's anything from business to sports, anywhere around the board. Patches are going to be easy to sell. And really what I did with it, funny enough, I did a lot of costuming. Out here in New Mexico, we had quite a lot of filming going on. So if you saw stuff on like Better Call Saul for the first couple seasons, just about anything embroidered on that, any of those patches I made. And so we did a lot of costuming. That was cool for movie production. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. We did tons of stuff for martial arts, for honestly, did a lot of stuff for hospitals, did stuff for, funny enough, paintball leagues. No matter what it is, a patch can be used as part of your decoration strategy. So it's hard to even tie it down. Mm-hmm. I mean, the classic stuff, certainly. We did a lot of soccer jersey patches and crests, things like that. And certainly law enforcement, always, paramedics, always. Those are the classic uses that you're always going to see. But at this point, the classic look of patches as an embroidery vehicle has become this, you know, this visual style and this shorthand, especially on hats, that is incredibly popular and has not been going away. And so honestly, anybody who has a cutter and a press and an embroidery machine can make patches quite easily that compete with the look and the style of a commercially made patch from a patch creating, you know, for an actual patch business. There are these large companies that make patches and that's all they do. You can make a very fine finished patch with an embroidery machine these days, and it's not that difficult, even though it's a bit more time consuming than the big boys who have it all sorted out to a science.
Great, great. So there's a couple other things. So we've talked a lot about the opportunities with a heat press for an embroidery business, whether that's the ability to do screen printing on a press, to be able to do applique techniques and mixed media and patches, and the list goes on and on and on, the importance of a vinyl cutter. So I kind of want to flip it, because a lot of our audience, this is the Heat Press for Profit podcast. They're owners of heat presses, and they are debating whether or not embroidery is a good growth plan for equipment in their business. So what would you say to a heat printer that's considering embroidery?
Certainly, the first thing, I am going to give them a little caution, because embroidery is not going to be quite as plug and play as heat press or any of the other printing methods, I would say. There is a lot to understand. However, part of the thing that people get hung up on with embroidery is thinking that they're going to have to digitize and provide their own art. I'm going to suggest, despite the fact that I am a digitizer and was an in-house digitizer, that there are tons of embroiderers who don't have to do that and don't ever do that. They always contract that out. So first and foremost, don't let that freak you out. Having customization and lettering software is really where your bread and butter is as a beginner. You don't need to go there. But I will say that embroidery has all this time stood the test of time. It still is a really desirable process. When you're talking about something that has durability and texture, the things that we've talked about even in the heat press world, nothing really beats embroidery, especially when you're talking about personalization. From very early on, we understand embroidery as the thing you do to put a name over someone's pocket. And that is still a market that keeps growing, personalization. And funny enough, as we've seen printers get into digital printing, they talk about how well they can personalize. And certainly heat press people jump in and personalize a lot. But embroidery has been doing it since the beginning of decorated apparel. And single head embroidery is just a really easy way to get into that. And once again, we talked about patches on hats. On a hat, though, heat pressing on hats can look pretty great. The classic decoration style for hats is always going to be embroidery. And I would really suggest, if someone's primary market has to do with doing hats as part of their apparel mix, embroidery is really the way to go for that, especially when you look at things like 3D foam and other applications that just really can't be done any other way.
Great, great. And as far as, and I know I usually try to stay away from brands as it comes to a heat press, because it can be a little bit self-promoting, but having an embroidery expert on the line, where would you recommend somebody start if they're looking for a commercially viable single head embroidery machine?
Now, honestly, I'm going to stay away from brands as well, but with a little bit of education on what I think people should look for.
Great.
The thing is, people jump in and say, okay, this brand, that brand are the best. Certainly, if you look at the top three brands that commercial people will tell you to buy, and it's easy to find them, any commercial embroidery group, people will tell you what the top three brands are, usually coming out of Japan. Japan and Germany, those are the three brands you're going to hear all the time. However, the thing is, they may not be equally good for every person because of things like getting out techs. Embroidery machines have to be serviced, and with fair regularity. It's not constant. But especially if something goes wrong on your embroidery machine, you break. There's a common part called a reciprocator. You can break by running your embroidery foot into the hoop. If you're not willing to take that head off and fix that yourself, and you don't need to learn that kind of stuff, you're going to have an embroidery tech out to your location to work on that machine. If you don't have techs in your area or don't have one close to you, you're either going to have to get on a service sweep with someone else where a tech travels through an area to fix things, or you're going to fly a tech out to work on your machine. So part of that cost of ownership really has to be about how hard is it to get a tech out and how much is it going to cost me? And that's something I think you can ask somebody who's representing a machine to you to tell you. You should ask that. Also, it depends on the support. There's official and unofficial support when you're talking about embroidery machines, both the support and the learning that you can get from the manufacturer, and I'll call this unofficial support. It's really the community that surrounds it. Are there people out there using these machines who know how to use them that you can access? Do they have user groups? Are there friendly places for you to get quick answers when you can't just get a call in the middle of the night? You'll find that on some of these brands that, yeah, there are great groups full of people who are using these in the field who can sometimes give you answers that maybe even the techs and the people, you know, behind the desk selling can't. So really, it's about looking for what your total cost of ownership is going to be in the machine. Also, if you're looking used, are parts available? Is this machine still current? What does that mean? Because a lot of people will go for deals on a used machine and end up where they actually don't have available parts or they have a discontinued machine. And what is it going to take to have somebody out to fix it when that comes or to do the regular maintenance it requires? Some of this stuff, the machines aren't really like your coffee maker. You don't toss one out when something goes wrong. They need to be repaired, and they cost enough that they should be repaired. So I really encourage people to look at that total cost of ownership. And then, honestly, the other thing that we're seeing, since we talked about prosumers and kind of when we were talking about that earlier, there are people who are using machines that are classically from kind of home embroidery brands. And though some of us in the commercial world can kind of look at that and say, oh, yeah, well, get a real commercial machine, you know, don't be a scrub, get something that's a real tool. A lot of these people are doing that because they can take that machine in, they can drive that thing over to their local sewing shop and have it sent in for a tech to work on it on their end. And that's something that may be covered in a way that we don't get on our commercial side. And there are some automated tools that a commercial embroidery machine doesn't have, things like knowledge of what the hoop is or placement or alignment that are done by the computer on board. So when somebody's using one of those machines, I don't immediately discount them having a commercial business. And in fact, some of those lighter machines are really great for doing things like event or experience marketing. When you go and put names on something, put small designs on something live for an event, for a company, for honestly, even in the retail space, you can do monogramming and name drops live and make quite a lot of money. And some people actually favor those prosumer level machines because they're easier to transfer.
It's really amazing the opportunities for creating experiences live or in store or in an event.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless of the print technology, that just seems to be something that retail brands are after, creating experiences. You mentioned it a little bit earlier. So
sure.
I think it's a great opportunity, especially when you're selling some of these accounts, is tying that in to the total offer to drive some loyalty from the customer.
Oh, and I think, honestly, great combination of heat press and embroidery. In the live space or doing event work where you're doing live decorating, there's nothing like having the heat press for very quick printing, to have things done immediately, to have things done on lighter materials, and having the embroidery machine running. And honestly, the look of a machine running a design brings people in. And it's just an awesome way to combine those two.
Yeah, I was walking down Fifth Avenue. I had a meeting in New York mm-hmm. City, and it just completely grabbed my attention that there is actually heat press equipment not only in the stores but in front windows facing the front the main walk on Fifth Avenue, like primetime real estate, whether it's heat press. And I saw some live embroidery experiences like in the Levi's store, so tons of things happening in that space.
I saw that just this morning going through Instagram, and I think it was Lion Brothers who was running the Harley Museum, and they're doing the same thing. People are selecting their stuff and customizing it in the Harley Museum, and the whole embroidery experience is part of it.
Yeah, that's great to see. Yeah, it really is. So let's talk about assuming that a heat printer jumps into embroidery, or an embroiderer jumps into heat printing, and I have the equipment and I can understand what it'll do. And I have them both, and I want to take it to the next level. What opportunities, you talked a little bit about sublimated applique and rip away applique, but what other opportunities have you seen for mixing the technologies?
Well, honestly, there's numerous opportunities. One of the things that's great about adding heat printing, especially if you do like cap heat printing, I really love to see people doing different kind of positions and placements that you don't usually see. Embroidery, one thing that we can't do is on a finished garment. For hats, we can't do anything on the bill. And heat pressing on the bill and adding that to embroidered crown is just a golden opportunity, because you can have the front, sides, and back embroidered and then have the bill or the underbill decorated with heat press. It makes that hat into a completely retail-looking piece. And I think there's things like that all over the place. Honestly, the other option is when we're dealing with garments that aren't great for embroidery as embroiderers, sometimes heat print is the best way to add when you're talking about a mix or a package. Let's say we have like something for a sports team where there's some, you know, really thin, gauzy kind of athletic material, but we also have hats or outerwear that's embroidered. You might want to heat press that gauzy material that's hard to embroider, that's difficult to run with that, or that affects the hand of that material, while you do embroider on all the outerwear and all the tougher goods. I mean, honestly, it's not just combining things as multimedia in the design. It's also thinking about the entire solution for the customer as a package. If you have the ability to do all of the above, that means you can print on things that you usually can't embroider. Or the one thing I see all the time is there's weatherproof things, or there are like lunch boxes, things where it's insulated, where embroidery would compromise the actual function of the item itself. You can use a heat press to either apply a patch with heat press adhesives, or you can do heat printing on those items and keep those sound while you're still doing embroidery for the rest of your work. So I think, honestly, those are the less sexy versions of this whole multimedia mixture, is saying, here's the things that actually makes more sense for one or the other, but as a package that you can offer as a solution. Other than that, I mean, immediately when you're talking about the cool creative stuff, I always love sublimation on embroidery. People don't understand that you're sublimating polyester. That's what takes sublimation. If you have either a dark garment and light polyester thread, or a garment that doesn't take the inks or the dyes to some degree, you can go ahead and press a pattern or an image onto the embroidery itself. It's something I've seen done quite a lot, actually in concert with 3D foam on hats. You'll use white embroidery thread and then print an all-over print that would be almost impossible to embroider on top of that thread after the fact. And it's one of just the coolest things. It really has a knockdown effect when you see someone, when you see one of these pieces, people look at them, they just don't understand how it's embroidered. And really, it's because we're dyeing the thread post-embroidery. And it's just incredible the effects you can achieve.
That is incredible. So I want to unpack both of those more. So the real practical side of it is completing the package with heat printing and embroidery, and kind of pairing them with items to increase the total offer and the total sale, which is a phenomenal use, very practical. And then from the creative side, being able to post sublimate threads, especially on 3D embroideries and headwear. And just to follow up on our last conversation, I could really see a cool use for that in a on-site printing space.
Oh, yeah.
Where you could pre-3D embroider the headwear in white and then be able to add different patterns or textures on top of it with sublimation on the spot. That would be kind of cool.
Well, not to mention, if depending on how you're doing it, we all know that sublimators really partner a lot with people who are doing photography. You can imagine even putting, you know, live photographs, stuff from people's phones, depending on the way that you have your setup done and the technology that's behind it. Anything is available for sublimation. So once we have, like you said, you have that white, the white embroidery on something, say you have a nice big slab of text on that 3D foam hat, you could very easily throw any image that there is that's compatible and sized right onto that space. I mean, that's really something awesome. Plus, it also means that you can have multiple versions of a piece without that being part of the embroidery and digitizing chain. So once the thing is digitized, you can still then change the look of it quite easily. And the other thing that combines well, and people are kind of surprised by, is I used to do a lot more of this myself, honestly, than I see done right now. And that was adding the rhinestones directly to embroidery as well. They will stick to actual embroidery on the embroidered portion. If they are pressed correctly, especially on fill stitches, you can actually throw rhinestone decoration directly onto it. And there's nothing like that for, it looks very much like a hand beaded look. So people in fashion or home decor might actually find that a heat press is more useful than they expected.
Great, great. So I know you write a lot. We've talked, we've spoken a lot about embroidery and heat printing, and sure. We mixed in a little bit of sublimation in there with the ability to print sublimation, which is a pretty easy add for people. Yeah. Are there any other common peripheral print technologies that you see an ideal shop having access to if they were to say, what's next?
Well, I mean, certainly you can go from there into digital printing, especially if you're doing small run and you've managed to get kind of the high margin, small run, high customization model. That's really easy to go to. Certainly that's something I like to see people do. Other than that, it just depends on what kind of market you have. I think part of the problem is that we fall in love with the technologies before we have the market. Since we talked earlier about, you know, trying to work on your business as well as in it, I'd like to encourage everybody to think about who their customer is and what they need before they think about what a cool item is to have in the shop. I know. I mean, I'm a guy who likes to do the digitizing myself, even when I know it's not cost effective because I like the creativity. But I also understand that just having new equipment isn't always the most useful. One thing I do see people doing more and more in the larger shops is bringing in laser. Laser bridge or laser cutting to do the applique on garment is also pretty interesting too. I still think having a heat press around is good for final sealing of everything, but being able to do that on the machine so it's a one-step process, that's great for the effectiveness and of the production chain, really. It doesn't add more necessarily always to the abilities you have, but it's something that does make things quite a bit easier.
Good tip. So the idea that I know Field of Dreams is coming back out, the idea of or if you build it, they will come, does not work when it comes to investing in print technology.
Well, except for the fact that, you know, they built the field to bring out the baseball players of the past. They didn't build a basketball court. and that's the thing that I keep seeing people do. They're like, man, I really love, you know, this kind of process. And they buy into the process without thinking, is this what my people need? Like right now, I would love right now to have a chenille machine. I have no reason to have a chenille embroidery machine. I have zero reason. Do I want one? Yes, I do. Am I going to buy one for, you know, a shop if they don't do the kind of work a chenille machine needs? Absolutely not. You got to think about who you're selling to, or at the very least, develop that market before you get in.
Yeah, totally agree. Start lean and make sure you have a clear understanding of your customer or your customers, as I like to say, because you should be working on multiple verticals and really specializing for each customer before you start going crazy with technology investments and overhead.
Well, that's why I love starting with a heat press on top of your embroidery machine. The heat press is the gateway that allows you to get to, you know, all the sorts of printed transfers, the sublimation, the rhinestones, everything we've talked about, all of that starts with that heat press, right from the base applique you can do to the most intense multimedia thing you can imagine. The heat press is going to be the easiest way to jump in because you can always have somebody else do the rest of the work for the transfer. But that last portion where you want to do the decoration, the heat press is the gate. So invariably, that's why I kind of recommend it to the embroidery world. And I would say for everybody who is in the heat press world and they want to get into embroidery, you know, get out there and talk to embroiderers first, see if you can see a machine and get your hands on one. People like me who are at the trade shows would love to take you through it. It really can expand your field to have both printing and embroidery together.
Great, great. All right, we're coming up on our time here. Is there any, I always like to do a final thoughts section in case we missed anything or even give this as an opportunity for you to present a question to me, maybe about the stalls business or just the business in general. Any questions for me that you'd like me to cover?
Actually, you know, I would. When you guys talk to embroiderers, what do you find is their hardest part of getting into heat printing technically and kind of in the business world? What do they ask you the most? Like, where's their first stop with you?
I think a couple things. One of the biggest challenges historically to being able to get an embroiderer over the hump and want to invest in heat printing has been just the perception of the result. Right. And I think that's formed sometimes incorrectly or sometimes correctly, but just based on the way things were. And sometimes that's hard for us to overcome, especially when we're dealing with more legacy embroidery businesses that have been around for some time. And everybody loves embroidery. It's a high perceived value. I do think it's an elite decoration method. And so I think that's one of the biggest challenges for people to get over. They can reason with it that this is a way I can do screen printing with a screen printed transfer. And that's a pretty easy connect because most embroiderers I talk to get asked for screen printing or outsourcing screen printing. But I think when it comes to the heat transfer vinyl, so to speak, I'm doing quotes over here, and all of the other products, is it going to stay on, stick and stay? I'd say that's the biggest hurdle for embroiderers to believe and overcome.
You know, I'd like to reach out to embroiderers and say, for the folks who've been around a while, do you realize that the materials that are out there now are not the materials that they were there back in the day? The feel and the look of things is a lot different, and you can print on more things than you can imagine. So, and that's from experience, folks. So if you need social proof, there's some social proof.
Yeah, and most of the embroiderers that are even looking at new equipment investment, typically it's because their embroidery is at capacity.
Yeah.
And I think just investing in more embroidery machines is the strategy. But as you know, with the cost, it can get pretty expensive as far as scaling that up to produce a multitude of items.
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, I really want to second the fact that you talked about the elite nature or the high perceived value in embroidery. I find that one of the reasons when I have talked to quite a few heat printers who come by and take my classes at the trade shows trying to just get their head around what embroidery is, it really is about higher end markets. When they go into like a high end golfing establishment, something like that, that was actually something that I've heard several times, or they just want to do higher end business to business garments. That classic left chest on a really high end sport shirt is something that's hard to beat. So I would say, you know, definitely look into that. It's not, despite the fact that I gave you the idea that it's a little technical, you can get a formula that makes it work, and there are people out there to help you learn.
Yeah, one of our top customer types are embroiderers, which means that heat printing and embroidery works as a great combination. And we have on our Heat Press for Profit Facebook group, which you're on, we have heat printers all the time asking about embroidery as the next move. And we recommend it as long as they have they understand the customer, they have the business to be able to invest in it. I think it's a great technology and one that's completely different than heat printing, and they complement each other well.
Yeah, that's the best thing about it, I think, is really this is the chocolate and peanut butter for me of the decoration industry. These are two great tastes that taste great together. There's no customer that wouldn't benefit from having both of them in their mix as far as what you're offering. And I think that with more and more people wanting to go to this, you know, one-stop shop that has everything they need, this is the easiest way, the least costly way to make that happen for your decoration shop.
Awesome. Well, Eric, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I had a blast talking with you for 40 minutes or so.
That was great. Thank you for having me on.
Good. And this is such a fun topic and a helpful one as well. So we hope you as a listener found something that can impact your business. And that does it for today's episode. If you'd like to ask follow-up questions, just look for our show conversation thread over at our Heat Press for Profit Facebook group, where you can network and share ideas with thousands of businesses aiming to make a profit with heat printing and embroidery just like you. We'll be right back.